Well, I would like to thank the organizers for this invitation, and I need to apologize. Should I turn it on? Yeah. Huh? Okay. So I should apologize. My mini course would be basically geometric, and I will be mostly telling fairy tales and not some precise theorems. But I want to try to make some, to construct some bridges between the several dynamical lectures which will be presented here in some geometry which is very close to this dynamics. So I will try to put the accents, and I will be mostly speak about geometrical part of the story. So, and just one more comment. Some notes can be found on my future web page. So I apologize, it's under construction, but still you can go directly to the file. And another word of apologies, it's enormously large because of some pictures and photographs. And also, I hope that there would be some notes for this mini course. So, the subject of the course is flat surfaces. And first, I want to say what are the flat surfaces. So, the first flat surface everybody knows. I take a parallelogram. See, here we have two vectors, v1, v2, and I identify the opposite sides of this parallelogram, and I get a flat torus. And the story would be very sad if this would be the only example, but fortunately, I can repeat the very same construction, or almost the same construction, and I can construct other flat surfaces. So let's take a broken line constructed from several vectors. So here we have a broken line containing only two vectors. Now I can take more. So V1, more or less arbitrarily. I took four vectors in this particular situation, and now I repeat these vectors in the different order. Say, I can start with V4, then I can apply V3, then V2, and then V1, and I get to the same point as before, and if I'm lucky, the two broken lines do not intersect, and I get a polygon. So, and I want to be lucky, so suppose we are lucky and we do have a polygon, and now I can do the very same thing as before with this polygon. I can identify the corresponding vectors by just parallel translations. So, similar to the previous case, I have a closed surface, but one can check that in this case, a topological picture of this surface will be like this. So it's a surface of genus 2. Since we started with a flat polygon, our surface is endowed with a flat metric, and we have a perfectly flat surface of genus 2, which is, of course, impossible. Well, there is no contradiction because our metric is really flat and very nice everywhere except the points which come from the vertices of the polygon. So at the vertices of the polygon, now we can have troubles. So I insist that, similar to the torus case, there are no troubles on the edges of the polygon. We just glue the edges like this. So the metric wouldn't have any singularities on the points which come from the edges. Well, in the torus case, we were lucky because we didn't have troubles on the vertices. Here we'll have some trouble because one can check that if one goes around the points which come from the vertices of the polygon, in this particular case, one can check that all vertices of the polygon are identified to one point, and turning around, we'll say, let's start here, then we go here, so this is V1, then, so it's, I start with 1, 2, then I jump to V1 here, and I continue, this is 2 prime, 3, and so on, and continuing this, procedure of turning around the vertices, one can check that one will turn around everywhere, around everything, so it will be a single point of our surface, and at this single point, we have the cone angle, which is equal to 6 pi. So that's the sum of the interior angles of our polygon. So we have a conical singularity similar to this one, except that the cone angle at the singularity will be not smaller than 2 pi, but greater than 2 pi. It will be 6 pi. So we have really a perfectly flat surface, except that it has, in this particular case, a single conical singularity with the angle 6 pi. Now, for me, this picture will be really a basic example of flat surfaces. So we'll always consider flat surfaces of this type, and they have somehow special because of the following. Our flat metric on this surface has trivial holonomy. So taking a vector and making a parallel transport of this vector along the closed path, we come back having this vector pointing in the very same direction. Say if one takes a cone like this and a closed path around the vertex and makes a parallel transport to the vector, then it doesn't come back usually in the same direction. It turns. So it's sufficient to open up the cone and to put it on the blackboard to see that it turns, that it turns in a different direction. Say, another example, take a surface of a unit cube. This is also a perfectly flat surface because the edges of the cube are non-singular in terms of the metric. So this is the edge of the cube. I can unfold it and one can see immediately that there are no troubles with the metric on the edge. So the surface of the cube is a perfectly flat sphere with 8 cone-type singularities, so the vertices of the cube are conical points, but the cone angles at these points are 3 pi over 2, and the holonomy of the metric is non-trivial. When we make a parallel transport of a vector along closed path, say around the conical point, one can unfold the cube and check that the vector comes back pointing to a different direction. Here, the situation is exactly the same as in the torus case. Because when we make our identifications, we use only parallel translations. There are no rotations, so only parallel translations. So nothing turns. The holonomy is trivial. In particular, we can choose direction to the north at some point, and we can transport it everywhere on our surface. And there would be no contradictions, though now I want to consider the surface, not the polygon, so we'll have closed path, non-trivial homotopy group. However, when I make a parallel transport of a vector along a path, it comes back to the same with the same direction, so our direction to the north, as soon as we define it somewhere, it will be globally defined everywhere, even in the conical points, except that at a cone point, say in this particular case, we'll have 3 directions to the north, because the cone angle is 6 pi. Fine. So I want to know these properties of flat surfaces. Oops, sorry. So we have trivial holonomy. We have several cone type singularities. Uh, and the cone angles are 2 pi times di plus 1, where di is positive integer. So they are always of this type. Also, one can apply a version of Gauss-Bonnet theorem and obtain that sum of these numbers is equal to 2g minus 2. And also, I suggest the following convention. So I suggest to fix the vertical direction, or if you prefer, direction to the north, and make this choice to be part of the structure. So I want to distinguish between two flat surfaces obtained, say, from this polygon and from this polygon turned by some angle like 30 degrees. Because I want to fix the direction to the north and make it part of the structure. And one more remark. So geodesics on flat surfaces like this always go, well, do not change the direction. I mean that if we take some point and if we meet a geodesic in, say, northeast direction, then this geodesic will always stay going in the northeast direction. In particular, it cannot intersect itself. It can close up, but it cannot intersect itself. And if you take arbitrary Riemannian manifold and a geodesic, of course, it intersects itself many, many times. Say, consider a geodesic on a cube, it will immediately intersect itself. So here, the geodesics behave in a sense similar to the torus case. They either close up or are winding in the same direction, producing sort of foliation. So that's the object, and that's the main object of my mini course. And my goal is to convince you that it's really beautiful and worth of being studied. So. What? Yeah, it will appear later. So right now I had to. Right now it's misleading. There is no dotted line. It will appear in 5 minutes. I was in a hurry. I apologize. So several motivations. Zero, this is one. So, first motivation is billiards in polygons. If one considers a billiard in a polygon, one can immediately replace the problem of the study of this billiard trajectories by a problem of study of geodesics on a flat surface, except that this flat surface wouldn't be as nice as here. It would be complicated, like a surface of the cube. So I can just take two copies of the polygon, put one copy on the other, and identify by the border. And as soon as our trajectory hits the border of the polygon, I declare that it continues, well, it reflects by the usual polygon rule, but I want to continue it on the bottom sheet. And as soon as it hits again, it goes to the upper sheet, and so on. So now, this is description in terms of the billiard. Now, the description in terms of a flat surface is the following. First, when I take two polygons, which are topological disks, and identify the borders, I get a topological sphere. So I take two disks, identify the borders, I get a sphere. This sphere is provided with a flat metric because we had flat metric on our polygons. As before, our flat metric doesn't have any singularities on the edges because I can unfold it. And one can check that Billiard trajectories, which I draw not on one sheet but on two sheets, become just geodesics in this flat metric. So geodesic on this flat sphere projects the Billiard trajectory, and every Billiard trajectory gives, well, produces two geodesics. But frankly, this is a complicated flat surface. I do not know how to deal with this complicated flat surface, because the holonomy of this flat surface is non-trivial. And fortunately, in some cases, which correspond to polygons with rational angles, instead of taking two copies of a polygon, one can take many copies of the polygon and unfolding the Billiard trajectory and construct a flat surface of higher genus but having trivial linear holonomy. And repeat the same story. We unfold the Billiard trajectory to a geodesic on this extremely flat surface like here, and the problem about Billiard in a rational polygon becomes a problem about geodesics on a flat surface like on this left blackboard. So Billiard in a generic polygon . This is the same thing as geodesics on a generic flat sphere. But Billiard in a rational polygon . This is the same thing as geodesics on a very flat, on a flat surface with trivial holonomy. And starting from now, I wouldn't consider any more generic flat surfaces. I will always assume that we have a flat surface with trivial holonomy and that we have fixed the direction to the north. Well, there would be one exception, but I will say about it explicitly. An exercise. Try to check that considering a Billiard in a rectangle, we can take four copies of the rectangle, which correspond to four possible directions of a Billiard trajectory. I fix a Billiard trajectory, so I send the Billiard trajectory in some direction, it will reflect, then reflect again, so there would be four possible directions. I'll take four copies of this Billiard table, unfold Billiard trajectory, and after all identifications, I get a flat torus. So an exercise, check that a Billiard in a rectangle corresponds to geodesic flow in a flat torus. When a rational polygon is more complicated, we have a surface of higher genus instead of flat torus, something like here. So this is one motivation. And a lot of results about rational polygons, and some results about irrational polygons, were obtained using this correspondence. So the second motivation is interval change transformations. An interval change transformation is the following map of an interval to itself. We just chop the interval into several pieces and then reorder these pieces, preserving the orientation of the interval, so we put them in the different order without overlaps, and we get a map of an interval to itself. So, first, as soon as one has an interval change transformation, one can immediately construct a surface such that this interval change transformation is the first return map to an appropriate transverse subinterval, first return map of the vertical flow. But first, I have to put some additional technical assumption. So we define the different order by some permutation. Now, so we have subintervals x1, etc., x, let me check the index, which I don't want to use several different indices, x, 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 n. So we have a permutation pi of n elements, and I want to consider only irreducible permutations. I want to avoid the following situation. Suppose that our permutation permutes first k subintervals among themselves, and hence the remaining subintervals among themselves. That means that our interval change transformation actually is decomposed into two. The first interval change transformation chops and permutes subintervals of the first part, and the second of the first of the second part. So this is somehow a degenerate situation. I can consider only one of these guys. So I can always reduce an interval change transformation to one like this. And from now on, I want to assume that this restriction is always applicable to our interval change transformations. So suppose we have an interval change transformation like this. I claim that it can... even no invariant subsets of very particular form. So invariant subsets like 1, 2, 3. So I don't want to have some part, say, left part of the interval up to some point be invariant. Well, actually, this automatically implies what you require. Yeah, right. I want to avoid the situation when, no matter what are the length of these subintervals, I have invariant subsets. So, and this is the condition which forbids this. Okay, so I promise to realize this an interval change transformation as the first return map of the vertical flow to an appropriately chosen subinterval on an appropriately constructed flat surface. So right now I am going to construct a suspension of a given interval change transformation. So this picture actually is, so now I can put back my horizontal line. So suppose we have an interval change transformation, in this particular case, of four subintervals, and the permutation which is responsible for the change of the order of the subintervals is 4, 3, 2, 1. In this particular case, the permutation pi is 4, 3, 2, 1. So I just have to give a recipe how to construct vectors v1, v2, v3, v4, which will provide me with the flat surface like one which is drawn on the picture. Because if I manage to construct, to realize this picture, then I am done. Because when I send the vertical flow from this red interval, one can immediately see that the resulting first return map will be exactly at the interval exchange transformation as we want to get, as one which we want to get. So the only thing which I have to tell is what are the vectors V. So here's the rule. The vertical component of vector VG is pi of G minus G. The horizontal component is defined by the length of the intervals which we use to chop our long interval. But the vertical component we have to choose by ourselves. So here's the choice. One can see that, one can check that with this choice, our broken line really provides us with a polygon and we get a flat surface and everything is like at this picture. And here I use this condition. So a flat surface is a natural suspension of over an interval exchange transformation, and also one can check that if one chooses another subinterval transversal to a vertical flow, the first return map to the subinterval will be an interval exchange transformation. And quite often to study interval exchange transformations, it's really very convenient to use flat surfaces also. I have to mention that this particular construction of suspension is taken from the paper of Howie Mazur of 82. So, and I'm almost done with motivations, probably. Well, one more motivation is as follows. Suppose that we have a so one more motivation is the study of flows on surfaces and surface foliations. Let me say, consider surface foliations. The flows are just flows along the leaves of these foliations. Suppose that we have a foliation on the surface defined by a closed one form. So without formulating a rigorous statement, however, I can tell that there is, well, a theory which declares that one can decompose this foliation into parts filled with stupid closed trajectories, closed by stupid reasons, and which are non-interesting. And interesting parts, the minimal ones, which are filled with trajectories which are dense in these parts. So forgetting about the parts, like if we have a closed one form locally, it's the same thing as a function. So if the antiderivative of this closed one form has minimum or maximum, of course our foliation have closed leaves around it, so it's not interesting. So forgetting about these parts and taking the remaining parts, which are really filled with leaves of this closed one form, one can apply a sort of conjugation to get from these minimal parts flat surfaces. So up to conjugation, the story about foliations defined by abstract closed one form can be reduced to the story about vertical leaves of on a flat surface. So in a sense, well, in some setting, instead of studying all foliations defined by closed one forms, one can study only vertical flow defined by these flat structures, which is somehow a much smaller family of objects and in some sense well, an object which is easier to treat. So conjugate by conjugation, minimal components can be reduced to flat surfaces and vertical foliation. And flows like this really exist in nature, say in solid state physics. One studies their problems of electron transport in crystals, which are reduced to the study of a flow on a surface, which is Fermi surface, the surface of constant energy of an electron in a lattice. And the foliation comes from, say, if this electron lives in the presence of a constant magnetic field, then the electron is supposed to be, well, to move orthogonally to the vector of this magnetic field, which gives this foliation on the surface. And so this is really something which happens in applications. So that's the motivations. And there are some more, but I think that they will appear in the lectures. And now I want to come back to this object, and I want to tell several words about another way to see the same object. And also I want to consider flat surfaces not individually, but I want to consider them in the families. So that's the next issue. Let's discuss families of flat surfaces. Which are actually the same thing as moduli spaces of holomorphic one forms. First, I want to start with a dictionary. I want to try to translate everything from geometric language to complex analytic language. First, our principal object, flat surface. And I want to try to convince you that this is the same thing as Riemann surface plus a holomorphic one form. And that these structures are actually identical. Well, so here is the proof. It would be very convenient for me to keep thinking of a flat surface as something which is obtained from a polygonal pattern like this, which is actually true. One can think about flat surfaces like this. This is a theorem which I don't want to prove right now. We can discuss it slightly later. But suppose that we already have a polygonal pattern for a flat surface. So a flat surface is glued from a polygon like this. We can forget about this horizontal line. We don't need it anymore. So let's think about the plane not as about R2, but as about a complex plane. So now we have complex coordinate on our polygon, complex coordinate Z, and our gluing rules are just in this complex coordinate as follows. Z prime equals Z tilde Z plus constant. So our identifications of the sides are parallel translations. So in this complex coordinate, it's just adding to a complex coordinate constants. So I can think about local charts here, and the gluing rule for the charts is z tilde is equal to z plus constant, which is extremely holomorphic map. So we have a complex structure on the surface obtained from this polygon. To be honest, I have to puncture the vertices. So on this surface with punctured conical points, I have complex structure. And then that's an exercise to check that this complex structure extends to the points which we punctured. So we really have, we get a Riemann surface. So that's the first remark. Second remark is that with this change of coordinates, when I pass the differential to coordinate, we do not see the constant anymore. So this is a closed one form defined, well, globally, globally defined on the surface. Again, to be honest, I have to puncture first the vertices of the polygon, then on the resulting surface we get this closed one form, which is holomorphic in our complex structure. And another exercise in complex analysis is to check that our closed one form extends to the points which we punctured, and it extends just as zero. So the vertices of the the conical points of the flat surface are exactly the zeros of corresponding holomorphic one form. So this is a forward construction. One can make a backward construction having a Riemann surface and a holomorphic one form. Locally, this is just a Poincaré lemma. So if we take a small domain where our form is non-zero, and the holomorphic one form on a surface has just finite number of isolated zeros, so taking a small domain, we can represent this form as dz, which defines a special coordinate z. So if we take another map, this is dz prime, which means that z is equal to z prime plus constant. So that we get this flat structure on the surface. So the construction is not only forward but backward. I was very brief in description of this backward construction, but please believe me that these structures are really equivalent. So that's the first remark. Now, we also have already mentioned that conical points So this is the same as zero of the one form omega of degree d. That means that locally omega can be represented as w power d dw in the neighborhood of this special point, which is a cone-type singularity. Okay, so I want to continue a little bit more with this dictionary, because two languages are extremely convenient, and sometimes it's very convenient to use one language, and in the other cases it's convenient to use the other language. So side VJ of the polygon. So this is the geometric object. What would be the counterpart of this object in this language? Well, let's consider this vector V, which represents the sides of our polygon, as a complex number. So it's a vector in R2. We can consider this vector as a number, as a complex number. Then this guy considered as a complex number is just the integral of the form dz from along the path joining, corresponding two vertices of the polygon. But which means that this is there. So which means that this is the integral of omega along this path. And a fancy interpretation of this thing would be that this is a relative period of the form omega. So usually one calls the periods of a closed one form on a Riemann surface an integral along a closed cycle. So here it's convenient to consider not only closed cycles, but also the cycles which are joining conical points. So paths which are not closed, but having endpoints in these conical points. So these two guys give us a conical, well, either the same conical point or two different conical points. And in any case, this vector is a path joining two conical points. So this is a relative period of our holomorphic one form. Now, one more thing. What would be a family of flat surfaces sharing the same cone angles? So I fix the number of conical singularities, I fix the cone angles at these conical singularities, so I get a family of flat surfaces, and actually one can check that this family of flat surfaces can be obtained by the following way. There are no restrictions on this vector locally. So locally I can modify any of this, I can deform any of this vector independently of all the other vectors, and since the second broken line is obtained from the same vectors, I will still get a polygon and I can repeat the construction. So I can deform this flat metric just deforming the vectors which I used for this construction. And in this way I obtain a family of flat surfaces. Of course, geometric combinatorics of this flat surface wouldn't change. The number of singularities, the cone angles at the singularities. And here, on the right side, I get a stratum in the moduli space of pairs Riemann surface plus holomorphic one form. Now, stratum in the following sense. We can consider all pairs Riemann surface holomorphic one form on it, but we can, in this family, we can fix the degrees of the zeros of the one form. Like working with polynomials, we can consider, say, all polynomials of order 3 usually have three distinct zeros, but a stratum in the family of these polynomials has two zeros collapsed to one point, so one double zero, one simple zero, and the most degenerate situation is when all three roots are, well, located at one point here. The story is more or less the same. We can consider this stratification similar to the case of the polynomials. So this family corresponds to this family in terms of complex analytic language. And also the coordinates this would be the last issue of the dictionary. One can check that under appropriate choice of permutation, vectors Vj can be considered as coordinates. In this language, our vectors Vj correspond to relative periods of our one form, so coordinates are relative periods in a
relative cohomology of the surface with respect to a collection of zeros with complex coefficients. So locally, any deformation is described by the relative cohomology class of the corresponding 1-4. And I'm done with the most technical part of the story, so this table is certainly the most technical part of everything which I want to tell. So now, to give an example of all these stories, let's consider the tori with the point of, well, under the point of view of this table on the right. First, what would be the family of all flat tori? And I remind that by convention we fix the direction to the north on a flat tori, on the torus. So the space of flat tori is actually the same thing as space of lattices. So this is SL2R mod SL2Z. Now, forgetting about the choice of direction, we have to quotient this space with respect to rotations. So if we do not want to distinguish between different directions anymore, and we get SL2R mod SL2Z quotient on the left by rotations. And this is just the upper half plane, the hyperbolic plane, quotient by SL2Z. So this is the modular surface. So I have to identify the corresponding parts of the boundary, so I get something like this. So I get a surface with a cusp and with two singularities, and so this is the space of flat tori where we forget about the choice of direction. So this space is non-compact, which is typical for flat surfaces, and it's non-compact by the following reasons. So if I take a torus which is not far from the cusp, so the corresponding points of this space represent flat tori. So points which are close to the cusps. So the cusp represents flat tori, which are very narrow and long. So these tori try to degenerate. They have very short geodesic. The same situation is valid for arbitrary flat surfaces. Now the space is multidimensional, but it's again non-compact because surfaces can degenerate. One can have a very short closed geodesic, and the surface can try to degenerate, and that's the same story is here. Now, I'm finished, yeah? Okay, just to pronounce what will happen in the next lecture and in the third lecture. In the next lecture, I will tell about the group action on this space, and then I will formulate the principal idea of this story. So suppose you need the principal idea, which was many times very successfully applied to different problems concerning individual flat surface or individual interval change transformation, so individual object like this. So the basic idea is the following. So one has to consider the crystal. So we are interested in the geometry or dynamics of some concrete flat surface. Instead of studying dynamics of this concrete flat surface, consider this flat surface as a point and the corresponding family of flat surfaces as a point of this moduli space. apply the group action, apply the group action which will be discussed in the next lecture, and consider the closure of the corresponding orbit. So the closure of this corresponding orbit sometimes knows everything about, or a lot of things about, dynamics on this individual sand surface. So that's the basic idea which I want to illustrate in the next lecture. And in the third lecture, the third lecture will be slightly more specific. I want to make a dictionary similar to this one between geometric description of flat surfaces and combinatorial description of interval exchange transformations. Namely, I want to present explicit representatives of all extended Rose classes, which correspond in geometric language to the following thing. So this space is not always connected. Sometimes it has several connected components. And one needs to describe these individual connected components. And that would be the description, geometric and combinatorial. Okay, thank you very much.